AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide from Syngenta, the first dicamba herbicide premix, which offers both contact control to manage the weeds you see and residual control to help protect against the weeds you don't see yet. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted use pesticide. We've climbed all the way to 0 degrees here in Northeast Iowa, and we're headed for double digits above zero for this afternoon. And the Mid-South of the U.S. continues to deal with severe winter weather and the power outages. We'll find out how the cattle feeders are adjusting for shortages of, well, shortages of everything.
Live from the 14th month of 2020 via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Brad Hewlett from Consolidated Beef Producers. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Bob Birdsell and Tony Melanthin. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yeah, not a bad day here right now. I know that there's a chance for a little bit of snow in our area yet today, but
okay.
It feels like we're starting to climb out of this hole, doesn't it?
It does a little bit. And you know what? I'm doing my part to take on this weather system head on. I'm notching my home heat thermostat just a degree lower per day. Nice. I'm down to 62 now. Yeah.
Oh, dude, seriously?
Yeah. Yeah,
you're going to have to watch out for the hypothermia here pretty soon.
I think I'm good. I mentioned like
You've
a week
acclimated?
And a half ago, I had acclimated. Yeah, I'm acclimatized to this. I'm like an Inuit now, basically.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, good. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. My propane tank says thank you for that.
Yeah. It'll only thank you if you do it, Chip. Come on.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, no, I'm probably not going to do that. We never run it too high anyway.
Hey, okay.
You know, yep. 67 is about it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we usually keep it pretty low anyway. I hate mm-hmm. to I do hate to refill that propane tank. I hate to refill the propane tank more than I hate to restock the wood pile. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Yes.
Because there's no sweat equity for you in that propane tank.
That's right. That's right. All right, man. We've got the Farmer Forum coming. We'll find out how the weather is affecting what Bob and Tony are doing. And we'll have a good conversation with Brad Hewlett. Like I said, they're basically the feed yards down south are basically short of everything. Fuel, feed, trucks to move cattle. Everything. We'll get the download from Brad coming up here in a little bit. All right, man, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, let's talk Texas, which accounted for 41% of America's oil production in 2019 and one quarter of its marketed natural gas output. Natural gas and coal-fired power plants need water to stay online, yet those water facilities froze in the cold temperatures and others lost access to the electricity they require to operate. The governor has called for an investigation. Meanwhile, concerns are building over livestock populations and dairies in areas impacted by power outages and extreme cold. And Chip, Pro Farmer obtained a statement this morning from JBS Pilgrim's Pride, which reads, quote, throughout this extreme weather event, we have remained in ongoing communication with local officials and energy companies to minimize operational impacts. We've reduced capacity or temporarily suspended operations at some of our facilities. We remain focused on team member safety, animal welfare standards, and customer needs as we navigate this situation. Chip.
All right. Yeah, we're going to talk with Brad about a lot of this. The dairies, think about what's going on there. They can't transport the milk, so milk's getting dumped.
Yep.
When temperatures do warm up and the water start to run again, I wonder how many problems they're going to find, not only in dairies, but in some of the electrical power plants, some of the houses. Some houses that were out of power for 4 days. What happens when it starts to warm up and the water starts to run again there? This is an issue that's going to be a pain in the butt for weeks, months.
Well, fiscal policy needs to provide additional support for the U.S. economy until the pandemic has run its course, according to Kansas City Fed President Esther George, with the efforts deployed in 2020 clearly helping the U.S. economy, saying, quote, "The economy needs a bridge." Inflation is not an issue in the U.S. economy, but George cautioned that once consumers begin to spend more freely as the pandemic eases, there could be price pressures. George did not comment specifically on provisions in the $1.9 trillion package being worked on in Congress. Chip?
Yeah. Watch it when you start reading some of the inflationary comments on food prices. As a producer, I know it's going to drive you crazy because so much of it is in packaging and transportation and not in the raw product. But there's all kinds of conversation now out there about what $5.50 corn is going to do to the cost of your cornflakes. So just be prepared for it. It's happening.
Well, here's some pretty good news. Biofuels are picking up steam in the shipping sector. Maersk Line plans to put a biomethanol-powered feeder ship into operation in 2 years. That could be the first container ship in regular commercial operations running on biofuels. And it follows a trial run that took a container ship across the Atlantic on biofuels blended with conventional fossil fuel. Shipping lines are looking for alternative fuels that will get them closer to a zero-carbon future.
Yeah, it's the trend everywhere, isn't it? And why can't you run those diesel motors with some biodiesel in there? Makes sense to me.
Yep. The full House may pass COVID aid legislation as soon as February 26, but it could face hurdles in the Senate, Chip. What do you know? Where Democrats can't lose a single member of their party due to the 50-50 split in the chamber, two Democrats have voiced opposition to raising the federal minimum wage to $15 per hour. President Biden signaled during a CNN town hall last night in Wisconsin he is open to negotiating a longer phase-in approach for that hike. And I should mention this, a rocket attack occurred against the U.S.-led coalition in Iraq. The attack, which was claimed by an Iraqi Shiite militia linked to Iran, several members of the coalition, including one American service member and several American contractors, either wounded or killed in that attack. Chip.
Yeah, we need to keep an eye on that. It's Iran testing the Biden administration is what it is.
Yes, absolutely.
So we need to watch it very closely. Thanks, Davis. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. How you doing, Margie?
Hey, Chip, a snowy day here in East Central Missouri.
Yeah, it's snowy day in a lot of places. Like 73% of the country is now covered with snow, some amount of snow. It's crazy.
Misery loves company in February.
Yeah, that's right. Let's talk some good news and get away from the weather. You've selected the new product of the year. What came out on top?
Yeah, we are officially turning the page on 2020, kind of our most exciting contest, I think, every year. And our readers have voted, and they voted Simpath from AMVAC and Trimble that will be brought to market this year as the 2020 new product of the year. Folks may be familiar with the Simpath system. This is an input application system mounted on the planter. So adding functionality to that planter path, and really the opportunity here for ag retail is to provide the prescription to precisely apply those crop protection and other input products exactly where they're needed in the field, which is a great lesson in product stewardship and a great way to only apply product where it's needed, where it's most effective, where farmers are going to get the highest ROI.
Margie, when you start talking about precision agriculture, this is going to be the next level of that, you know, the micronutrient applications or any of the crop protection that you're talking about. It is literally the next level up, isn't it?
AMVAC says that they have 25 potential Simplas applied solution projects in the pipeline. Wow. And they want to bring three to five new products every year. So definitely an area of development that we're going to continue to watch. And the next way to unlock, as you're saying, that next layer of precision.
Exactly. Margie, thank you so much. That's Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. We've got Brad Hewlett from CBP up next. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology is the first and only dicamba herbicide premix. In October of 2020, the EPA extended its registration for use this season and beyond in dicamba-tolerant soybeans and cotton. I'm joined today by Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Bobby, what are the advantages that Tavium offers compared to a solo dicamba product?
Yeah, Tavium is a combination of dicamba and S-metolachlor, so it offers two effective sites of action and one convenient premix. Unlike dicamba alone, Tavium provides both contact and long-lasting residual control of the key weeds in soybeans and cotton. Tavium controls the weeds growers can see and helps protect against the weeds that they don't see yet. Tavium allows growers the ability to fight back when managing tough weeds such as Palmer amaranth and water hemp, just to name a few.
Yeah, that's great, Bobby. We know that more sites of action is a good thing, but tell us more about the benefits of this specific combination of S-metolachlor and dicamba.
Having more effective sites of action is better because weeds are more likely to develop resistance to herbicides that contain only one effective site of action. The combination of S-metolachlor and dicamba is also what is driving the longer residual activity in Tavium. Growers are going to see 3 weeks longer residual on annual grasses and small-seeded broadleaf weeds with Tavium than what they would get from applying dicamba alone.
Perfect. All right. Thank you, Bobby. That was Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead with Syngenta, explaining the advantages of Tavium compared to other dicamba herbicides. Don't let time run out on your herbicide management plan. Visit SyngentaUS.com/Tavium or speak with your Syngenta retailer to learn more. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip technology is a restricted-use pesticide. Vapor Grip is used under license from Monsanto Technology, LLC.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. I'm your host, Chip Florrie. Got Davis Michelson with us. And
yes, sir.
We have been talking all week. We've been talking about it longer than that because we talked about it in the weather forecast with the guys from BAMWX.com earlier this dive of just, you know, Arctic weather into the southern reaches of the U.S. down all the way to the Mexican border. So,
The thing is, we sort of focus on Texas because of the oil production, because of the livestock production down there. But we're also looking at Louisiana. Alabama's been affected.
Absolutely.
Hearts and prayers out to these folks because you hit the nail on the head. This is going to take a while. And
yes.
the consequences, consequence, not the right word, but, you know, the impacts of this, we're going to be finding out in a few weeks exactly what those impacts are longer term. And that could be equally as messy.
Yeah, that's correct. There's going to be a lot of repairs, a lot of efforts to bring back operations, whether we're talking about energy production or cattle production, bringing everything back up to 100%. Let's get an update on what's going on down there. Brad Hewlett is with Consolidated Beef Producers. He joins us right now. Brad, you're usually on the afternoon show, but boy, when we get into a situation like this, we got to bring you to the morning and talk issues with you. How you doing, Brad?
I'm doing great, Chip. How are you getting along?
We're doing all right. Now, you're not down in Texas, are you?
Yeah, right now. I mean, I'm at our home office based out of Canyon, just south of Amarillo. So yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm in Texas right now. So.
Okay. At the start of the show, I said that the feed yards are basically running short on everything, whether it be feed, energy, whatever. The thing that you're not running short on is winter weather, but what is the situation? What's the biggest challenge right now?
Right now, the biggest challenge for a lot of these guys, one is the cold. I know there's lots of feed yards that are having issues with wells freezing up, having issues getting cattle watered, which does not help, you know, if you're trying to run a well and you're having rolling blackouts, so you don't necessarily know that you're going to have electricity 100% of the time to keep your water wells running. Some feed yards, depending on where you're located, have the luxury right now of having generators that can keep that stuff going. But some of the yards farther south that aren't used to this kind of weather aren't set up for that. And the other part, too, is, you know, shortage of natural gas. Some of these yards are being, you know, their natural gas is being turned off, so they cannot run their flaker mills like they normally would. So that's also impact. In fact, impacting their ability to produce feed for these animals every day also.
Yeah, yep. Up here, Brad, there's a reason that I keep the water dripping in one of the sinks, and it's because that pump needs to keep running. As soon as you take the power away from it, you're vulnerable to freezing it up, and I'm sure that that is happening with those rolling blackouts. The feed, how dire is the water situation, Brad? Because here's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that in some of the worst cases, that if we can't get water to these animals here quick, we're going to start seeing death loss increase.
Yeah, I mean, that could very well happen. You give it to these feed yard guys and, you know, everybody in the ag business, they're going to do everything they can to save these animals and to take care of them as much as they can. Some of these guys are having to put in extra work as far as, you know, if they do have wells freeze up, you know, having to move these cattle daily from different pens up so they can get water and stuff like that. I don't know that there's going to be maybe a huge death loss due to lack of water. I think they can manage by, but it sure is not going to be an easy task and will be very, you know, very difficult on everybody involved.
Right. Right. Okay. The feed supply, you mentioned the flakers. What is the situation with the feed supply going into the feed yards?
Most everybody had what they needed around them. It feels like, one of the things you are seeing some issues with is maybe some distillers get to some of these yards because you see, you know, hearing rumors of, you know, some of these ethanol plants being shut down due to, you know, not having enough natural gas to run, you know, run their own production. So then they cannot send that, you know, byproduct out to the feed yards. So that is an issue. Also, some of these feed yards, like I mentioned earlier, they're having to go back and just doing, you know, some dry roll corn or something like that rather than producing flake corn like what they normally would, just not having the natural gas to run those boilers that they need to flake that corn.
Yeah. Yeah, I keep hearing, Brad, that there's concern about these cattle getting off feed and how long it's going to take to get them back and get those the pounds back that we might lose. That could create a hole in some marketings. How big of a concern is that?
You know, it's definitely a concern. Cattle going out, you know, right now, you hear anywhere from 50 to 100 pounds lot of where they should be. Your concern is, you know, different parts didn't get quite as much snow, you know, as what other parts did, but you're still going to have, once we kind of get through the rest of this week and in the next week, once things start warming up, everybody did get some moisture. So then you get into the freezing and thawing of pens and cattle start to get muddier and stuff like that. So, you know, this is a problem that will, you know, last for, you know, several weeks into maybe a month too, as far as, you know, lack of weight on some of these cattle that we've lost. And, you know, the other side of that, too, is where corn is at right now. Does it pay to feed these cattle longer to try to get that weight back? Or you just say, do you just bite the bullet and go ahead and get them out of there?
So yeah. When they get to
there. That is a decision that a lot of feeders will have to figure out what they want to do there.
Right. Yeah. When they get to the X on the calendar, maybe they're just going to move. You said something about the cattle that are moving a little light. How much of a problem is there moving cattle, and how are the packers dealing with this?
It has been a little bit of an issue this week. There's been several plants that have been either down completely or down on certain shifts. The problem that you have right there is, you know, they're also running into issues with lack of natural gas to run boilers at the plant. There are also some of these rolling blackouts. You're having some issues there because the problem is you don't want to have a kill floor full of cattle hanging there and all of a sudden you lose power for several hours. So there's some issues there that they, you know, I don't think the utility company will actually tell them exactly when they're going to be out or how long. So it's kind of a gamble whether you even want to run or not. So, and obviously if the plants aren't running, then that's backing up the whole cattle supply as well.
Right, right. Are the workers showing up at the plants and at the feed yards too?
It seems to be most of the time, you know, workers are showing up. Haven't heard any issues as far as major absentees or anything like that. A lot of the plants, I think, are running, you know, a little bit, you know, slower on the startup. Just, you know, everybody knows how it is. And you know, with winter weather trying to get around, especially in areas that aren't used to it, it just takes everybody a little bit more time to get to work. But for the most part, it seems like everybody is showing up to work.
Yeah. Brad, how, for us up here in the, you know, the Midwest, the upper Midwest, whatever you want to call it, we go through stretches like this. Now, this one's pretty significant. I mean, it's hanging on. And it's not that you don't get cold. It's that you don't get cold for this period of time. Is that what makes this so unique?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I mean, you know, I was thinking about that earlier. You know, the guys, you know, you get to the guys in the more northern Midwest. I mean, these temperatures probably aren't unusual for them, probably not so much prolonged. But you get, you know, especially, you know, the southern part of the United States, as far as maybe, you know, Kansas on farther south, you know, they haven't seen a winter like this for a long time. And right. So, you know, people just aren't necessarily prepared for this. And it makes it a little bit more difficult. I mean, you know, you can ask questions, well, why didn't you have generators and all this stuff? And at some point it comes back to, you know, is it affordable to have a generator right. sitting there that we might only use once every, you know, 15 years.
Right.
But, you know, nobody knows, is this, you know, maybe we're getting global warming under control, and this is how it's going to be from now on.
Yeah, maybe the cycles are taking us back the other way now, is how I would put that, Brad. any impact on the cash cattle market that you anticipate going forward here, Brad?
Yeah, I mean, it'll definitely have an impact. You know, this week, probably the needs of the packer will probably be somewhat limited just due to the number of days they are in shifts they have lost this week. You know, obviously that's going to have effect on down the road as far as what they need to buy this week for next week. So
yep.
I would say trade this week will probably be very limited, just knowing that, especially in the south, the packer will not need a whole lot. You know, they've lost a little bit of kill in the north, but not as much. But, you know, not to make any excuses, but they're a little bit more used to this type of weather in the north. So it doesn't seem like they're having quite as many issues up there, even though it's still bad. But, you know, there will be some issues to the market this week, for sure.
Yeah, we were looking for ways to move the leverage in that market over to the producer, take a little bit of away from the packer, and all we're doing is kicking that further down the road. So, all right, Brad. Hey, good luck to you, man. Saturday's not that far away, and it looks a whole lot better.
Yes, that's for sure.
All right. Thank you, Brad. That is Brad Hewlett,
okay.
Consolidated Beef Producers. We'll be back with the Farmer Forum next. Hey, everybody. Chip Flora here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online. And I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, we just got off the phone with Brad Hewlett from Consolidated Beef Packers down in Texas, talking a little bit about that cash market, the cash cattle market, and how we are trying to move the leverage from the packer to the feeder, but this storm and the disruption in marketing is just going to prolong that effort a little further down the road.
Yeah, it just doesn't look like we'll see much cash cow trade at all this week in that far southern plains area, and maybe even up in the northern market. We'll have to see, you know. But you know, I think that's some of the pressure on the cattle market this morning. We've got the futures just too far out in front of the cash, and they're pulling back as a result. And we're seeing funds take some profits out alongside of the market, I'm sure here.
Absolutely. Okay, take us over to the grain trade. The wheat market, doggone it, giving back a bunch of the gains that we got yesterday.
Yeah, kind of like I said, it's really hard to sustain these winter kill rallies in the middle of winter. You know, it's going to be weeks, if not a couple months, before we know the extent of damage. And spring weather will have an impact on how the wheat crop recovers anyway, especially in areas where it's not fully dead. So, we'll see, but for now, you know, just pulling back off of yesterday's gains. Been really choppy and quiet in both the corn and soybean markets today. Of note, you know, yesterday the meal market tried to pull to the downside and then came off its lows into the close because of the strength in the other markets. Today it's pulling to the upside, so we'll have to see if it wins out today or if it moderates back to near unchanged by the close.
Excellent perspective right there, Brian. Thank you, buddy. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Man, I've been working too hard. 10-hour days and I'm tired. Damn, this knuckle busted.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me, and we are going to get this Farmer Forum rolling right now. Let's get Tony Melanthan in here from south of Menominee, Wisconsin. How you doing, Tony?
Doing pretty good, Chip. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing okay. I'm just how you dealing with this weather up there?
Well, we are working our way towards a high of 14 degrees today, so.
Yeah,
we're bracing ourselves for the heat wave, but it's a dry heat, so we don't have to deal with the humidity. So
outstanding. That's great to hear. Now here's a guy that I didn't know if we were going to be able to get him on the show today or not. Bob Birdsall from Northwest Missouri. Bob, are you really there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Well, I figured maybe you were reporting to Jupiter, Florida for pitchers and catchers, man.
No, I'm too old for that. My arm's not what it used to be.
How you doing, man?
Doing good. I survived the cold, so other than one tractor not wanting to start for a day, that we got along good. Nothing. No drinkers got lucky. No drinkers froze up, even though we had some 20 below and lower wind chills. So, but everything seemed to come through it. I put on Twitter there the other day, I'm kind of glad for this kind of weather like this. I've got some North Dakota and Canadian blood in my beef cows.
Yeah, now you don't calve. When is your calving season?
Well, we calve twice a year. We've got a spring herd and a fall herd. We're just getting. Okay. We've had a few calves drop. We're not supposed to. We'd had a bull sneak out on us, and he got into some cows that had calved, and we didn't figure they were ready to breed, but apparently they were. So,
You
always you think you're going to be lucky. If we'd been 2 weeks ago, it'd have been fine. But
right,
a little cold, but we've got along all right. I've got one in the house right now. I'm going to have to. Gonna have to get the cow in and help him get started nursing. But other than that, we've got along good.
Yeah. And the thing is, guys, I mean, we talk about this kind of weather and how hard it is on calvings early in the year. But, dang, we've had blizzards in early April before, too. I mean, it happens. And we get caught in with the calving season. Now, the temperatures that we've got that we're dealing with out there right now are a little bit different. So, Tony, you're up there in dairy country. Any anything to report on how this cold weather is impacting their operations?
Not too much. Up here in Wisconsin, we're used to getting stretches of weather like this. So it hasn't stopped anything. The flow of milk is still happening. It takes longer to do your chores. That it's not as pleasant. You have to deal with things freezing up a little bit, but it's something we're used to. It seems like we get a stretch like this every year, and you can rest easy. Your Wisconsin cheese and cheese curds are still being made.
Yeah. The natural gas supply, have you seen any of the impact of the shortage like they're dealing with in areas where the energy demand has shot through the roof for home heating?
We have not here in my part of Wisconsin, no.
Yeah. What about you, Bob? You're further south down there where maybe some of the influence is being seen. Are you seeing any of the signs of a natural gas shortage?
Well, we're not on natural gas. We're on propane here. They'd stopped and filled up the tank up at what we call the outpost up there at the farm. And the local propane company was limiting to 25 or 250 gallon to a fill. Jeff Season lives there in Albany, and they're on natural gas. And Albany said, try to turn your heat down and a little bit, because they was having trouble keeping up with everybody needing natural gas right now. So
yeah, okay. All right, and here's the deal. You know, I was going to have somebody on from Texas on with you guys, but dang, it's just they're a little busy right now, to say the least, man, trying to keep up with everything. Guys, we got the Outlook Forum. Let's get away from the weather here. We got the Outlook Forum going on this week, and I want to talk about what can be kind of a touchy subject for some, and that's just USDA general and data. In general, Tony, what if you were going to put a number on your trust level with the USDA numbers that we're getting right now, where might that fall? You know, one being zero trust and 10 being, yeah, you know, we got to trust these numbers.
You know, I'll be nice today and call it a 5.
Okay. And why is that? Why? What makes you decide to be nice today, Tony?
just Midwest nice, I guess. I'm in a good mood.
Gotcha. I got a feeling that that's a little higher than what you've been following some of the recent reports.
Yeah, I mean, you know, looking at the recent reports, it would bring my trust level down to a 2 or 3 probably, but they aren't always this wrong, but they're not usually right either.
Yeah, going through a tough patch in here. Bob, are you going to be paying any attention to what's going on with the USDA Ag Outlook Forum?
Well, I'm kind of with Tony on the numbers, and you've got to watch it because that's what the trade goes off of, what right or wrong. So, you know, whether it's right or wrong, that's the numbers they use, and so that's the way you've got to plan. And like last fall, it bit us in the butt.
Yeah. When we look back at the 2020 marketing season, I'm getting ready to do a marketing panel next week as part of the Top Producer Summit virtual get together, and one of the things that the panelists want to do is take a look back at 2020. And kind of dissect it a little bit, because they feel like they came up a little short on their marketing effort in 2020. Tony, do you feel that way, or did you have the ability to catch the fall rally?
Oh, you know, a little bit of both. I'd say, you know, for us, after COVID hit and things got real ugly, we didn't do a whole lot of forward marketing. Now I'll also say we missed out on the highest soybeans by about $2 a bushel, just how it kept rallying after harvest. But it's a little bit of both. I mean, 2020 was just a weird year. I mean, it's an outlier. It's hard to draw too many conclusions from it, I think.
Yeah. Yep. What about you, Bob? When you look back at marketing of the 2020 crop, what's going to be one of your big memories there?
Well, just the information they had that, you know, everybody you had on your show was saying, well, you need to be selling into this rally because with the numbers we have, there was, you know, that this looks like it could be the best we have. But, you know, like another thing you guys were saying, the basis was so strong that, you know, their numbers couldn't be right. But, you know, everybody's trading the numbers. So, you know, if the numbers were right, you didn't want to miss out. So,
right.
But luckily, you know, we didn't get hurt quite as bad because with our non-GMO and the premium we got on it, we was, you know, we still left some money on the table on the base price. But, you know, we still got good money for our beans that we sold.
Right. Right. You know, it's like we said on the afternoon show many, many times, the futures market can lie to you. The doggone cash market can't lie to you. And it was telling us that supplies were a lot tighter out there than what the numbers from USDA indicated. Tony, the American Farm Bureau Federation has come out with a list of suggestions on how USDA could do things differently. Is that, you're involved with the Wisconsin Soybean Association and the American Soybean Association. Is that something that commodity groups and somebody like Farm Bureau should be doing, going to USDA with a list of recommendations like that?
You know, I haven't seen Farm Bureau specific list, so I'd be remiss to comment on that. I know, you know, our line of thinking on the soybean side is you know, there's something going on. It needs to be improved. You know, we want to bring it to, you know, USDA's attention, and work with them, you know, maybe to make improvements. So I don't know about a specific list, but I mean, things do need to be improved there.
Right. Right. Yeah. Anything that we can do to get the most accurate information into producers' hands at the earliest point possible is what we should expect from USDA. And that is, it is a bit of an issue. And one of the reasons that we've got to do that is Bob, the market's got to send you signals, right, on what you should be doing in the year ahead. And maybe we've already gone too long for the market to send signals to influence the acreage decision for the year ahead. What do you think on that?
Well, I think that's a good possibility. You know, if the markets really won't change us too much because we're basically a 50-50 rotation. You know, it always seems that any time we tried to chase the market on changing acreages, that we ended up getting burnt on the deal. So we just, yeah, we've just got to where we just stay 50-50 and go on and try to do the best marketing we can.
Gotcha. All right, we've got a farmer forum going. We've got Tony Melanthan from Wisconsin, Bob, I had Brad in a note from up above when I was talking with you, at Bob Bertzel from Missouri. We're going to keep it going when we come back. I'm going to ask you that question, Tony. How has the market influenced your planting?
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to the Farmer Forum here on AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is lurking out there, and we're having a conversation with Tony Melanthan from Wisconsin, Bob Bertzel from Missouri. Tony, the rallies that we've seen from the summer lows, corn and soybeans, are they is the price action that we've seen, is that going to have an influence on how you split up acres for 2021?
Yeah, we're a lot like Bob up here. It's really not having any influence. You know, we have our rotation, and you would need a very large price discrepancy or profitability discrepancy
there you go.
For us to get away from that, and it's just not there right now. So
right, you know, we talk about the acreage battle, and can we get cotton involved? Will spring wheat come along? You guys, every producer that I talk to says, well, we're not going to get too far away from our rotation. Bob, is an acreage battle a thing of the past?
Well, to an extent it is. You know, it's like you've talked on the other afternoon shows a lot. Your northern states where they can, they've got so many options that they can plant up there. You know, here we're set up for corn, beans, and wheat. You know, we don't really have good markets to take anything else to. You know, we've looked at some before, and you lose all the premium in your freight. So, you know, you just well stick with what you've got and know, and rather than try to do something different. I don't know. You've probably seen her poll, but Karen Braun, I was just thumbing through Twitter while we was on break, and she'd run a poll last night, and looks like 41% of the voters to the poll has corn at 91 to 93 million and soybeans at 89 to 91. So,
okay. Yeah, that's lining up pretty good with the expectations going into the outlook for them. No doubt about it. Tony, does alfalfa get involved in an acreage battle there in Wisconsin?
You know, not really. You know, the guys, the dairies who need alfalfa, you know, they plant it, you know, kind of regardless of what the price of commodities are. And yeah, you'll see times when hay is high or low price, but trying to chase that market just with the establishment of alfalfa and the chance of winter kill is a pretty hard thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Tony, you made the comment, you got away from price and went to profitability. There needs to be a bigger difference in the profitability that could be realized from corn over soybeans or soybeans over corn to get you to bust out of a rotation. And we always talk about that corn-soybean price ratio. It used to be a 2.5-to-1 would start to maybe inch some acres away from corn over to soybeans. But now it's at least 2.6, and it might be 2.7, 2.75 on that corn bean price ratio before acres start to move around. I don't know I don't know if the futures market realizes that, Tony, but I think the cash market might in some cases with some of those new crop bids out there.
Right. You know, I would agree. And then it also depends, you know, when did you buy your fertilizer this year? I mean, if you got it pre-bought back in December, that changes things drastically versus if you're looking right now, looking at what, you know, phosphates and nitrogen fertilizers, well, all fertilizers, look at what they've done the last 2 months. You know, it just needs to be a bigger discrepancy for us to make any changes.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And Bob, I know you're in that same group. The revenue potential is going to have to diverge significantly before you bust up your rotation, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It, like I said earlier, you know, anytime we've tried it, you know, it's never worked as well as what it looked like. You know, you still, you know, you tried a forward contract, but then everybody else was doing it too, so you ended up shoving the markets down, shoving prices down, and I think that's why people have quit chasing. You know, if they got a set rotation, that's they're staying with it because it's just not worth the hassle of trying to change.
Yep. Now, Bob, it was a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, that you brought up the point about, are you going to go to a shorter season soybean, try to get that September market instead of the October market? Are you going to do some of that?
Yeah, we've always planted early beans here. We do it just to kind of get the combine out and check and get we got started doing it to plant wheat so we could get in and get the wheat planted before things got really busy. And we've just got to where we do it. And now then we're doing it to we're started putting cover crop on. We're putting early beans where we fall pasture our cows and try to get some cover crop put on, get a little extra feeding for the cattle. To winter on, so
gotcha.
We planted a 2.5, which is very early for here. They should be ready to come off September 15th if we get them planted at a decent time. So
gotcha. Tony, has the early planting date on beans made their way up to your area?
Say that again, Chip.
Has the early planting on soybeans, has it made it up to Menominee?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of guys, you know, we started to, you know, we'll start planting in the last week of April. And then, you know, this year we are going to try some earlier beans too. You know, typically we're in a 1.5 to 2.0 range. We're going to back it down, try to plant some down at about a 1.0. You know, we planned this before the prices got this crazy. It's more just to spread out the workload in the fall. So.
Gotcha. All right. Hey, great job today, guys. Appreciate the conversation. Real quick, Bob, will it take more than 82 wins to win the Central, the NL Central?
I imagine. I figured I was thinking 90.
Oh, geez. You're more optimistic about what that Central's going to be than I am. But, all right, man.
No, I haven't paid a lot of attention to it yet, so.
No worries. Hey, thanks for jumping in today, Bob.
No problem.
Tony, thank you.
Yep, thanks, Chip.
Yep, that's Tony Melanthan, Wisconsin. Bob Birdsell, there in Missouri. Got to come back this afternoon. We're going to have a conversation with Luke Swenson from the Money Farm up in Fargo. And tomorrow morning, Biden's Buy America plan. Thanks to Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your Syngenta retailer to learn how Tavium can help protect against tough and resistant weeds for 3 weeks longer than dicamba alone. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted use pesticide.